Welcome to the Regent Brands Podcast. This is a place for consumers, operators, and investors to learn about the consumer brands supporting regenerative agriculture and how they're changing the world. This is your host, Kyle, joined by my co-host, AC, who's going to take us into the episode. On this episode, we have Juan Guzman, who is a co-founder and the CEO at Artisan Tropic. Artisan Tropic is supporting regenerative agriculture with its chip products made from plantain and cassava. In this episode, we learn about the family origins of Artisan Tropic, the design and implementation process behind their regenerative transition, and both their plans for the future, plus Juan's thoughts on scaling regenerative agriculture at large. Juan is an old soul and an amazing storyteller. We definitely felt like we were on the ground in Colombia with his crew for most of this episode, and we're excited to share it with you all. Here we go. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Regen Brands Podcast. Today, we are fired up to have Juan Guzman of Artisan Tropic. So welcome, Juan.
Thanks. Good to be with you guys.
For those who don't know Juan, he's an absolute legend, doing some killer stuff in the space, working with a bunch of farmers out of Colombia. Is that the only place your farmers are at? Or you got some more relationships there that we don't know about?
No. Everything's in Colombia right now.
Yeah, and the level of authenticity, we'll dig into a little bit, but it's a really cool story. But before we dive too deep into all of that, give the audience who may not be familiar with Artisan Tropic a quick overview of like what products do you manufacture and where can they find you today?
Yeah, awesome. We make plantain and cassava chips. Everything sourced and produced in the coffee region of Colombia. And we are in about 5,000 points of sale across the country. Your Whole Foods, Sprouts, HEB now, and Targets. Kind of grown distribution into the conventional space a little more.
Love it. And what's your favorite SKU?
It's hard. Probably the jalapeno cassava. I'm a spicy guy.
I need to get my hands on that. Shout out to Mother's Market. I picked up some of the cassava chips there in Irvine, California this past weekend. The thinnest chip, but also very durable and can hold up to a giant dip of guac, which is what I need. So the eating experience was like amazing because how thin the chip was, but like it was still strong enough to hold up to my massive dip. So like kudos there, man. It was phenomenal.
It's a good thickness to dip ratio. That's what you're looking for.
Juan, take us back in time to just how this whole thing got started. Give us the origin story of how Artisan Tropic came to be.
Yeah. I'll try and keep it brief, but my family moved to the States in 1994. My parents from Colombia with me and my sister. And my parents had a food distribution company in North Carolina, distributing not the same quality of snacks as we produce now. And my sister had, I'll name them, they're distributing Takis, which is a really popular, fried mm-hmm. corn kind of snack. And my sister had some health challenges when she was in college and got diagnosed with an autoimmunity called Hashimoto's. And traditional medicine basically said, there's nothing we can do. You got to take medicine the rest of your life. And we ended up meeting a nutritional therapist who told her a different story and told her, it's a long process, but we can heal the root cause of this. And it's all about food and it's about eating real food and nourishing your body and healing your gut. And so she went on this journey and then our whole family went on the journey together of learning and just curiously observing how to eat real food the way that our ancestors did.
The whole family because the diagnosis and the journey starting.
Yeah. So she was in college. It was about 2011, 2012 when she was going through the process. It took a year and a bit. Of like very, very intentional mm-hmm. healing. And I say that our family went on the journey because I was living at home at the time and it was kind of like a game changer decision from my mom coming home after the first meeting with the nutritional therapist and seeing the pantry and going, okay, we're going to do this. We got to like clear the pantry out and start over. And that's what she did, you know? So took everything out that wasn't, you know, clean, real food and started over. Went to Whole Foods for the first time ever, I think. and spent way more money on food than she ever had. And that's kind of how it started. Yeah. So.
I can totally relate to that. So I have an autoimmune disease and I took my family on that same journey. And it's amazing how many people in the regen ag space come from a human health background or like some sort of issue that they've had or a family member has had, which is obviously not a great thing, but I think that specific outcome coming from it is an amazing thing. And you know, we have to like leverage this whole food as medicine, nutrient density movement. I think for a lot of people that the climate and the biodiversity and all the other pieces are going to be super important, but it's not going to resonate with everyone. Whereas I think the human health and food as medicine piece will resonate with everyone. So love to hear that. And just, I'm sure y'all are tying it in. I've seen it in kind of some of the marketing material about her story and all that. So how did y'all go from this experience kind of as a family to creating a CPG product?
Yeah, exactly. So I, you know, left this off before Artisan Tropics started, but that's where the next piece unfolds, where, you know, my parents had some experience in the food space and distributing and selling snacks, and now had this new kind of passionate vision for creating a product that was real food, that was clean, that was going to be something that people with health conditions could eat and enjoy and know that it was real food. And so we saw the opportunity to create a brand and position plantain and cassava chips as a really, really clean alternative to other salty snacks. And then our roots in Colombia kind of aligned with, you know, plantain and cassava being such staple foods in Latin America and the tropics all around the world. And so that's kind of how the idea started to brew, and then the concept for the brand began, and we really saw the opportunity to position you know, plantain and cassava chip as a better for you alternative, where in Colombia specifically it's seen much more as like a cheap commodity snack. And so that's kind of how it started. And initially the distribution was through my parents', you know, local distribution company. And that's kind of how we started to grow and scale. But it was very, very slow and sustainable from the start. We weren't trying to grow at a super rapid and uncontrollable pace. And that's how it started.
It's super interesting. And I think, you know, one of the things that really resonates with me is like your family's going on this journey and they're learning about health. And then they're also realizing that their business is sort of doing the opposite of what like the family journey is going towards. So like that juxtaposition of trying to become healthier and realizing the power of food as medicine, but at the same time, continuing to have to sell, because that's the business model, these snacks that aren't necessarily great for human health. And I love the fact that it was like, okay, well, we've gone on this journey as a family. We've seen the power of this. You know, can we utilize this distribution model, this distribution business, to try to like incorporate these healthy snacks to some of the, you know, points of distribution that we already have? So I think that's really cool. Number one. Number two, I feel like you're skipping out on a lot of the nitty gritty. It can't be as simple as like, you know, we just called Columbia up, they gave us cassava and plantain, we threw it in a bag, here we are. You know, there's got to be more to it than that. So like, what was, as a, you know, obviously you guys had a lot more experience with food sales and distribution than most of the founders that we've had on this call. You know, you weren't necessarily super green, but you had never really created your own brand before that I'm aware of. So what was that process like? Why did you choose the name Artisan Tropic? How did you first cultivate those relationships with the farmers in Colombia? And then from there, based on, you know, my understanding of the brand, you know, we started with super clean snacks. And then we sort of pivoted towards regenerative. So tell us about that transition and why that was important to you and the family.
Yeah, man. Great questions. Tell me if I go off track, because that was a lot of questions, but
It was. I don't think it's easy. It's like 9 questions at the same time. Yeah. So yeah. My bad. Apologies.
No, that's fine.
That's usually what it's I like, do.
It's good. I think I got them. So really fascinating. And you know, one of the things that we, from the start and 9 years later now, are very proud of and very excited about is that this is 100% family owned and operated. And not just, you know, completely funded by the family, but also we have, you know, all of my direct family working with the business. And then additionally, we have about 7 or 8 other cousins, aunts, uncles that all work with the company. And so we really love that. And that's kind of the culture that creates the energy and the products that we make, you know. So an additional piece of that family story is that we initially look for a co-packer and a co-manufacturer in Colombia. And like you said, we have experience, my parents especially, in the food snack distribution side of the business. But starting your own brand in the natural space was a huge learning curve. Massive. And a lot of the things that we knew really helped, but in a lot of ways as well, it was like a completely different business. And so one of the pieces was finding a co-manufacturer. We found a great co-manufacturer in the coffee region of Colombia, and we started working with them. And that first meeting we had with them, one of the members of that company was also the plantain farmer who was supplying all the plantain. His son was at the meeting. He's sitting across from my sister, and he just love at first sight. He's just like obsessed with
her. I have to pause you right there, because earlier, as you were talking about the family fair, and I was like, man, so if anybody wants to get involved, do they have to marry into the family?
Yeah.
And there's like literally a thought that I had. And now, like, I feel like your story's heading that direction. So I just had to call that out.
Yeah, man, it's amazing. So he's like shot through the heart, starts pursuing her.
Wow.
And they end up getting married a few years later. And, you know, my sister has a kid now, and he works with the company. And, you know, we still have a great relationship with his father, who's really a pioneer, man. And if we talked about the transition to regenerative agriculture, he is just a legend and a real example for kind of the curiosity that's led to where we are. And so really, really, like, there's so many different aspects of it that are all within the family now, right? And so we start working with this co-manufacturer, and they were awesome. They were really, really great, top quality, all the certifications that we needed and wanted to position the brand like we did. They were very helpful.
What doing all certifications were important to you at that time?
So non-GMO project was one, and then paleo was kind of it. I remember that actually, because I've been working with the company from the start in a lot of different functions and roles. And I remember, paleo certification when it was first, it was almost around the time when we started, like 2014, that they were starting. And paleo was pretty big at the moment, and we really thought it would be an appealing thing to have on the packaging for consumers who were learning that, you know, just ancestral way of eating, really. And I remember, man, like, this lady, she was starting this thing, but she also had a little market running out of her apartment, and like she was buying our product and selling it, but then a few months down the road, realized that was not the business model that was going to make her successful. And she like really pivoted towards the paleo certification. And, you know, that's become a really big thing now. So it was that gluten-free certification. Those are the three that we began with and saw that were important and necessary to position the product in the better for you natural space.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so I'll continue with, you know, the relationship was awesome. We began to grow slowly. Mm-hmm. A lot of learning moments along the way about quality and packaging. And you asked about Artisan Tropic, and, you know, true to the family origins and story, we kind of started a thread with our whole family and aunts and cousins for ideas around a name for the brand. And everyone threw out a bunch of ideas. And my aunt, who is my mom's twin sister, was the one who had the idea for Artisan Tropic. And everybody really liked it. And it kind of stuck. It kind of stuck out above the rest, all the other options. Artisan, nice. Obviously, being, you know, the nature of the product, it's so artisanal. Every single batch is different because plantain ripens very differently. Cassava, you know, grows in the ground, and every single plant of cassava is very different. So there's the artisan piece, and then the tropic, because we started, you know, sourcing food that was really staple to the tropics. So that was kind of the inspiration for the name. And
that's great. Yeah, I'm curious, what was the worst name that somebody put on? No, I just out of curiosity, you know, what was the ones that were like, wow, I'm really glad we didn't go that route.
We're about to piss off one of the ants here.
Dude, that's a great question. And I'm sure we have emails or text somewhere. I have no idea though. I'll dig that up. That's such a good question.
That'd be a good follow up. We'll put it in the newsletter. Yeah. So please dig it up, because we'd love to know.
I do. Yeah. Juan, I'll find that.
Before you go to the Kyle's last question about transitioning to regenerative, you were also a professional soccer player at some point. So how was that interwoven with this brand coming together and you working on the brand? Like, what were those timelines like?
Yeah, man. So I played soccer full time professionally up until 2021, and I traveled a lot.
I did not know this. This is
played all over the place.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really special and really a childhood dream that I was able to fulfill, and I'm really thankful for those years. But I'm also really thankful that I was able to stay connected and plugged into the family business. And like I said at the beginning, you know, I did a little bit of everything. So kind of had my hands and a little bit of knowledge around all the different aspects. I was involved with online fulfillment. I did a lot of e-commerce stuff. I did accounting. I did invoicing. I was working on certifications. I did some key account sales management. And I, you know, a lot of teammates had to supplement their income by coaching in the afternoons or doing different things. And I always had a really stable and awesome job to keep me busy in the afternoons, because you're pretty much training all morning and done about noon lunchtime, and you have, you know, 5-6 hours to be productive and and do stuff. So I was plugged into the family business the whole time, and really thankful that my parents wanted that, encouraged that, and allowed me to be very flexible no matter where I was living.
I can totally relate to that. So we share more things in common than we knew before this call. My family operates a food distribution business, and the vast majority of the family has worked there, or you know, still does. And the totality of roles that you just mentioned, or the different functions of the business and having exposure to all those functions, I think is the best possible way to bring anyone in any business, especially a family member where there might be complacency, or folks inside the organization might think, oh, this person only has this job because of their last name or whatever that may be. And having done something similar, like, I would love to see more, you know, more brands have leadership that has worked in that kind of totality. And we need to bring like more well-rounded skill sets like that into kind of the region brands fold. So just something of like common ground there that I think is cool. A great learning tool, maybe for other brands or people thinking about building them.
Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't really planned, but I'm very thankful. I learned a little bit of every facet of the business along the way. And it's true for a lot of other family members, you know, that have done a lot of different roles. Cause we're a lean team and we're, you know, kind of having to do a lot of different things, different times throughout the 9 years. And, yeah, it's beneficial. I think it's a great thing. It's a great point, Anthony. So as far as kind of the transition to regenerative agriculture and this focus, you know, I mentioned my sister's father-in-law and him really being like an inspiration and a pioneer in the space. Because when we were first starting, we started to go visit his farms and visit his father. So it's something that they've been doing for generations. And to really kind of understand his heart behind why they love this, you know, why they're so passionate about growing plantains and some of the things that he was kind of starting to think about, you know, organic certification and biodynamic farming and different concepts that we'd never heard about. And so it was through that we started to learn about these ideas and to become curious about, you know, if the way that we started this company was to make really, really great food that was not just good for the planet, but great for people, then the more we learned about regenerative agriculture, you couldn't look away. And you couldn't ignore the fact that this was the best way to produce the cleanest and most nutrient dense snacks that we could. And
awesome.
It was around, you know, mid 2020 that I believe me and my sister both heard a podcast with Dr. Zach Bush. And I remember that being like a real pivotal moment for us and really wanting to understand more and go deeper into educating ourselves around what this could look like. So we started to ask questions and try to get in touch with people in the space. And we got introduced to the folks from Terra Genesis International, which is this amazing organization specialized in, you know, permaculture and regenerative agriculture consulting for brands. And they work with, you know, a lot of clothing brands, with Vans and Timberland and the North Face, I believe. And we started a conversation with them around what we were trying to learn and do. And we ended up, you know, signing on to do a project with them to really analyze our supply system and see what the opportunities were for our main two, you know, inputs, which are plantain and cassava, and how we could design a system that would be regenerative. And, you know, it was the first time that I understood this, like regeneration is not an endpoint. It's a scale and a journey and a direction. And, you know, the 7 or 8 months that we worked with them was as much as it was like an end product of this incredible design and, you know, report that they gave us, it was like such an education to learn from them and understand regeneration. And they really planted a lot of seeds around, you know, this is great. We're designing this agricultural concept for the company, very important. But what about the mindset and the business practices and you know, all of these other things that regeneration has to encompass? And so that was awesome. Really, really love those guys. Still stay in touch with them and you know, stay up to date on the progress of what we're doing. But the product of that time with them was, we have a family farm, which is in the heart of the Colombian coffee region. I failed to mention, we transitioned after working with this co-packer for the first 5 years. We transitioned to build our own manufacturing facility in the coffee
region. Wow.
And so that was, really, really beautiful, incredible. It's right in the middle of an active plantain farm. And
wow.
It's fascinating. Crazy. And that was finished and started, you know, operating in 2019. And so we have our own family farm, and it produces about a fifth of the product that we need for our volume right now. The opportunity we saw with Serigenesis was to really focus on that farm and use it as a pilot for these design concepts and a way to, first of all, test it, the profitability of it, the production of it, and then to be able to use that as a model for other farmers in the region to see what's possible. Because in a lot of ways, the obstacle or the hesitation to these ideas is like, I don't know if that'll work. Like, that's a big risk to take, you know? And so that was kind of the way that the project with Serigenesis evolved and what began, you know, the journey that we're on right now.
Yeah, you know, there's four things I want to cover. I've been counting because we super appreciate all the information. That was a ton. Number one was the passionate people in regen. You mentioned your sister's father-in-law and how, why he was so passionate about this. And that's one of my favorite things in working with all these different brands. This is the first episode after Expo West, where for me, I was finally able to connect with a number of these people I've been talking to for years, literally, and connect in person, one, you being one of them, and to really like feel the energy and the passion in those rooms for people who are talking about changing the food system for the better. You know, Anthony, like you mentioned before, getting more nutrient-dense food in people's hands, food is medicine, helping to heal the planet, mitigating the climate crisis, et cetera. So I just want to highlight that passion you mentioned, and I think that's contagious. And for those who work in this space, we all sort of feel that similar passion. Two, you mentioned the Zach Bush podcast. And one of the other things I think is really interesting around those who are involved in regen and really trying to push it forward is they almost all have that aha moment. There's like that gateway moment, like, you know, I heard about this through Kiss the Ground or the Zach Bush podcast, or, you know, maybe it was reading Dirt to Soil, like Gabe Brown's book, something like that. And it's like, I don't know too many other times. Like, I don't remember the first time I heard about organic. I don't remember the first time I heard about non-GMO or gluten-free, you know, but for regen, there's something like that resonates, that people really start to understand something and like, this is going to affect the rest of my life in some capacity. So I think that's super interesting. I completely forgot what number three was because I'm but maybe it'll come back here, I'm not sure. But number four, what I love about, you mentioned, you know, supply chains are hard for brands. Most brands don't have the ability to single source anything from one particular farm. And what I love about what you mentioned with the pilot on your own family farm is it's leading by example. And it's transitioning an entire supply chain, and it's saying like, hey guys, we're going to take this risk first. We're going to, you know, do the test on our own farm, and we're really going to see how we can make this work. And I don't want to get too far ahead in the story. But the fact that you guys were willing to take that risk and then hopefully like get others to see what you've been able to do and to help them implement those practices is just such a cool like leadership moment that you and your family have done. So just really want to commend you guys for stepping up in that way.
Awesome. Thanks, man. We'll remember if you remember point three, just interrupt me, but those are very true.
I'll keep you posted. And,
you know, I share that same sentiment around meeting you guys in person last week. Like in a lot of ways, I was only there a couple of days and I got home like absolutely wiped and drained. And you know, different people have different experiences around this, but like when I walk through a show like that, there's so much energy around things that really, really like deplete me. But interactions with you guys and with, you know, all the other brands that are in this space, like, really energized me, gave me life, gave me hope, gave me vision and passion. And so it was just really special to see you guys in person, and very different from like walking around the rest of the show, you know?
Yeah. Love to hear that. And I mean, we're going a little bit off track here, but for those who aren't at the show, there's like, I don't know, AC probably knows, how many regen brands were there?
There, Patrick Smith at Wolf Tree Ventures put out a map, and he used our list and his list, and it was 63. Not all of them are like fully regenerative, but that's people that have made some sort of regenerative claim or have some sort of regenerative initiative.
And I mean, I don't know how many total brands there are there, but I would assume that's like 1% or less of the total exhibiting brands there. 2%.
Yeah, there's like there's like around three grand. There's like around 3,000 brands. So Patrick said in his release that it was around 2% of exhibitors.
So to Juan's point, as we walk around this show, and it almost feels like it's not necessarily like Team Regen and like everybody else, but that's kind of how it feels. And so when you're cruising around the show and you're just like wanting to be excited about these brands to the point of like energy depletion, you're seeing all of this quote innovation, and it's really difficult as somebody who has been bitten by the regen bug, if you will, to see all this other stuff there. And it's just like, well, kind of what's the point, you know? Like, if it's not regen, why are we innovating in that direction anyways?
Yeah, we could have a whole podcast episode dedicated to the false promises of food tech, but I'll leave that for a second. The big takeaway that I had that could have been your number three, Kyle, is on the Terragenesis piece, is like, a lot of the certification bodies are doing amazing work. We love them. We support them. They're awesome. But they're usually practices or outcomes focused or both. And Terragenesis is saying, wait, hold on. We're design focused. We're not even there yet. Mm. We're literally like, we all talk a good game about regen being contextual, but like, I feel like Terragenesis walks that walk maybe better than anyone else. And so I just think that's really cool. And Juan, would love to hear, like, through that process, what were some things that came from that, and like what changed to make to put y'all higher on the regenerative continuum, or what practices did you implement, or like what really came out of that design process?
Just for the record, real quick, that was better than my number three. I still remember what it was. That was way better.
Good teamwork. Yeah, man, great question. The contextual nature of what TGI does is phenomenal. And you know, the guys, Chris personally, he was there and, you know, walked the farms and met the farm, you know, he was there in person and understood kind of dynamics, and he understands Latin culture as well, which is, you talk about context, like it's a huge deal, right? Regenerative in the tropics, growing plantain and cassava is a very different idea than a cattle farmer in Wisconsin or, you know, so it's very context specific. And that was one of the things that we started to learn with TGI and the resulting, report and kind of recommendations around our supply, had to do with, you know, cover crops, perennial intercropping, rotational cropping, the incorporation of compost on the farms, and also understanding that like cassava and plantain are two completely different crops. What some of the concepts around plantain are very, very different than some of the concepts around cassava. And so they designed, you know, a couple different models and context specific designs for plantain and cassava. And again, one of the things that we discovered and kind of had to have this conversation with TGI about was, hey man, like, we have a brand and a business that needs plantain and cassava. So there is a spectrum of regeneration, which is like an agroforest. And you know, it's just like the most biodiverse thing you could have. And that is awesome.
Yeah.
But specific to the brand and the products that we're producing, like, we have to prioritize the two crops that we need, right? Can we grow in this spectrum towards more biodiversity without, you know, suffering? Like, we don't have enough raw material to produce the snacks we need.
Yeah.
And so the concepts around plantain are very traditional and basic for the region. Basically, plantain used to be grown with coffee and cacao, and even cassava. That was like the way things were done for generations. It was resilient. It was, you know, it fed a community, right? You can't just feed a community plantain. And conventional agriculture started to say, hey, let's be more efficient and more productive and just wipe out all the coffee and the cacao and plant, you know, monocrop a bunch of plantain. And so a lot of design around plantain is, hey, can we reintroduce coffee, reintroduce some cacao? Can we plant some avocado trees that are a little taller in the strata? Can we incorporate some like perennial trees that are going to be really great, not just for the soil material and the green manure that will give a lot of nutrients to the soil, but also attract a lot of bird species that are going to be helpful in keeping pests off the plants, right? Like, there's so much in the design. And one of the things as well is in the tropics, there's a lot of rain and there's heavy, heavy winds. And so the design that TGI came up with incorporated, you know, rain resilience. So like really protecting riparian zones on the farms. And trying to use perennials and bigger trees to create wind barriers that are going to protect the plantains, which are very susceptible to heavy winds.
It's insane. You know, I consider myself relatively, like, I know a little bit about regen. Now, more so in the brand space than, you know, the actual on-farm practices, but like the level of thoughtfulness that goes into the design of that agricultural system is just mind-boggling. I love the like, let's attract the predators that are going to reduce the amount of like pests that are on there. So like, instead of using pesticides, like, we attract herbs. You know, it's just like, it's such common sense to work with nature for trying to reduce synthetic inputs. And then the wind barriers and the rain barriers, like, it's just crazy to have to think about all that at the same time, while also, to your point, how do we ensure that we're still producing enough product that we can, like, you know, supply our company? Wild.
Yeah, man. So, you know, one of the things, obviously, along this continuum is eliminating herbicides and pesticides and chemical inputs that, you know, not only deplete the nutrient quality of the food, but also destroy the microbiome and the soil biome. And so the elimination of that is a continuum, and we're like hoping to get to a place where we don't need any inputs. But immediately the transition was to use, you know, real organic inputs. And the, you know, one of the things that I believe Zach Bush said, or one of these podcasts along the learning journey, was, you know, can we go back to valuing resiliency over efficiency? And not at the cost of efficiency, like, we want things to be efficient, but not to the point where they become completely unresilient. And so one of the examples in the tropics is, when you have so much rain, the lack of cover crops and living roots in the soil creates huge runoffs and depletes the topsoil, and, you know, the plants suffer because of that. And likewise, there's heavy periods of drought and heat. And when you don't have cover crops and living roots, the soil dries out really quickly and the plants suffer. And so what we've seen in you know, incorporating and maintaining really healthy cover crops is that when it rains, they really help the crop and the whole system to be resilient to the rain. And then when there's drought or heavy periods of heat and little rain, the soil stays cooler, it stays more moist, and it really is a fascinating balance that nature designed, and we're just trying to emulate that a little bit more.
Yeah.
I keep interrupting. Sorry, I feel like I'm taking over.
That's good.
Yeah, something fascinating I learned about cover crops and the importance, in specifically how it helps rain. And I didn't realize, and I think I was on Rome Ranch where I learned this, and they were talking about how cover crops essentially act as an umbrella for soil. They don't, not to keep it dry, but to reduce the amount of pressure from the actual raindrops, because if it's exposed soil and all that rain is coming down, it's actually pushing and compacting the soil down, which makes it harder to avoid that, absorb that water, which to your point, one, creates more runoff. And it's just something that you, I, again, don't even think about. I never would have thought like soil needed to not be exposed to rain because of pressure. You know, it's insane.
Yeah. Interesting.
Juan, are y'all doing any animal integration or grazing anything? Or are y'all able to from a food safety standpoint?
That's a great question, and it's something we're you know, trying to incorporate more. We're looking at incorporating bees on the property. And then there's, you know, it's not like an industrial size chicken coop, but there is, you know, the local farmers have chickens and they all come and graze the farm all the time, which is great. And then additionally, we use we use poop from cows in the area to make compost in the area, and that's actually a really neat piece as well that we started with the agronomists we're working with. So we are using the waste from the peel of the cassava and the plantain at the manufacturing facility and making this really beautiful compost using cow poop, the peel from the plantain and the cassava mulched together, and then making really, really fantastic compost with all the nutrients that these plants need, right? Like the peel of a plantain is just loaded with potassium, and it's just going to go right back into the soil and nourish these plants again. So it's a really neat cycle. And the other thing is we not on our farm, but now some of the projects that we've started, one of them is with this phenomenal agronomist in the area named Santi. And he has this beautiful concept of macadamias. And macadamia trees with rows of like cover crops that they use cows to come in and graze. And it's fantastic. It's one of the coolest concepts I've seen in that region. And he calls it, also talking about pests, like he calls these, you know, strips of cover crops and grass, he calls them insect hotels.
Nice.
And again, it's just fascinating and brilliant. Like these overgrown areas attract so many pests and insects, and they just, you know, it's full of life and microorganisms, and that keeps those pests from going and attacking the macadamia trees. And so it's like a natural pesticide. Which
give them something else to eat, you know, simple.
Wanted to drive this home for the average person, right? That's maybe just an educated consumer that wants to buy these products and understand kind of, I'm here, I'm at the farm in my mind. I'm seeing the imagery of what y'all are doing. You know, you're on the path, but I'm seeing biodiversity. You know, I'm seeing obviously still high yield or decent yield production agriculture with the plantains. You know, I don't know if you're intercropping the cassava, but that's a root vegetable that's going probably in the ground. You're going to have to plant that or till a little bit to get that in the ground, but I'm seeing the biodiversity, right? And I just want to finish that image on the, you know, whatever 90, 95, 99% of other plantain, you know, plantations or whatever farmland we want to call that. It's basically just rows of trees, bare ground, and that's it, right? Or is that image not accurate?
Yeah, it is accurate. And we can touch on the cassava, which is, again, completely different and fascinating. Please. But yeah, plantain. So mm-hmm. the most brilliant example is our neighboring farm, our family farm neighbors another mm-hmm. plantain farm. And yeah, it's just monocrop plantain. And they spray mm-hmm. a ton of herbicides, so the soils are barren. Additionally, so this is interesting. Every plantain tree grows, it produces one bushel mm-hmm. of plantains, which weighs anywhere from 10 to 20 kilos. And then that wow. plant is chopped down and it has produced a child right next to it, which is already growing by the time it's produced. It's really fascinating. And my sister's father-in-law talks about it in such a romantic way around, the life cycle of this plant when the plant is giving birth to the plantain bushel out of this flower. And it's fantastic. But we keep all of that biomass. So farmers mm-hmm. come in, they chop down the tree, they chop it up, they use part of it as a trap for this really nasty pest that comes and lives in the roots and burrows in the roots. And they use it as a trap. And then they use the rest of it as biomass and building soil fertility. The farm next door, not only do they spray herbicide and everything's dried out and barren, but they take all of the trees they chop down and they carry them out and dump them in a riparian zone somewhere. And so that's another huge difference to how things are done.
That's wild.
Yeah.
What about the cassava? We've talked a little bit about plantain, but like what's regenerative cassava look like? Cause that's a root vegetable versus a tree, crop, right?
Yeah, man, I'm so excited. The timing of this conversation is really interesting because cassava, TGI designed this beautiful cassava concept and it does, mm-hmm. it revolves around rotational intercropping. And so we have been, looking for ways to do this. And we partnered with an agronomist who I mentioned, Santi, and, he was really excited to do this on his farm. And so what we've done is about 8 months ago, we planted rows of cassava in between avocado trees.
Wow.
And the cassava is intercropped with the avocado trees. At the end of this season, which we just started to harvest, the avocado trees are done producing, so they'll be chopped down. Fascinating about this as well. Like Santi has a lot of syntropic farming concepts that he's employing, and one of them is when you chop down these avocado trees grow pretty large. Mm-hmm. We use all of the large trunks build big piles that decompose into the ground and become insect hotels. And then all the small branches are mulched on top of the big logs. And again, context specific, it rains so much in the tropics that this is like decomposed in a matter of months.
Wow.
And, it's really fascinating. So that, harvest of cassava will be harvested in the next few weeks, and then it will be planted. Cassava will be planted where the avocado trees were, and then we are going to plant plantains where the cassava was.
Wow!
And one of the fascinating things about plantains, I was telling you a little bit, they start to have children. So every plantain tree grows a few different kids and you eliminate all but one and then you let that one grow. And the plantain trees start to walk. So they start to move a little bit because this one grows here, the next one grows next to it, and the next one grows next to it. And so they start to all kind of walk in a certain direction. And so then
it's like inviting rotational grazing behind it, right?
So then once the plantains walk a little bit, then we'll plant another harvest of cassava where the original cassava was. And so that intercropping is a concept that's part of the TGI design. We might also use some beans or some corn, which are really great rotational crops for that. Because as you mentioned, like it's a root tuber. So it's very, I don't know much about potatoes, but cassava is like very, very hard on the soil. And if you plant cassava in the same soil for two or three seasons, that soil is like completely depleted and extracted, and it needs to rest for a long time. And so this concept is, as far as we're concerned, like nobody in the region is doing this, at least at a commercial state, at a commercial level, right? Yeah. And the model usually in cassava in the region is big outgrowers come, they rent land for 2 to 3 years, they monocrop ton of cassava, and then after 2 or 3 seasons, they leave and the soil is just destroyed, depleted, and they go find more land to do it again. And so this concept
is next with just like bare soil, nothing.
Well, yeah, that's right. Like that soil, you know, either needs to rest for a long time, or they have to bring in cattle, or you know, do something different to regenerate the soil. So this concept is fascinating, and probably the thing I'm most excited about is that we made this whole plan around, you know, having a forecast for what the harvest would be. And we've never done any kind of regenerative organic cassava. Santi hasn't done it either. So we used kind of numbers around like conventional growth to project it. And the numbers we used were that each plant should produce about 2.5 kilos of cassava. So that's kind of the projections we use to make financial models and all this. And we just did the first trial of the first harvest earlier this week. And the plants are yielding about 5 kilos per plant.
Let's go.
Just amazing. Amazing. So they're yielding about 5. We're just like, you know, floored by this. Like, this is incredible. Not only because it'll, you know, allow us to have more raw product to manufacture in the next couple of weeks, but because like the concept is so amazing and it works. And so, you know, I'm very excited about presenting this and showing the results of this to other agronomists in the region and saying, listen, not only is this better for your farm and your soil, but like twice the production, man. This is amazing.
That's nuts.
So that's very exciting.
Trying to do any sort of studies on like the nutritional density of like this cassava versus conventionally grown cassava?
We haven't. That's part of the things we want to do, and part of the things that we outline with TerraGenesis. But again, this is the very first one, and so the soil testing and the nutrient density testing of the raw materials are things that we're definitely working on. And wanting to have, because that's an important metric for the success of these projects, you know.
Totally. I mean, and again, just like the lead by example, you know, when you have these types of results and you get to show your partner farms, like, look, this is what we're doing when you implement this, it just becomes a no-brainer. Like, okay, yeah, I'll grow twice as much with the same amount of worker, you know, that's crazy. I do want to bring it towards future outlook. This has been an incredible conversation, and gotta give you credit as like a storyteller. I feel like I'm on the farm. I feel like I'm seeing the birds. I'm seeing the trees. Like the visual that I have. I think
I'm walking with Santi. I'm chilling with Santi right now. Me and Santi are in the rows.
I'm digging up giant cassava roots.
We'll have to actually get you down there.
Yeah, man.
Would love that.
It's so magical.
What's in store for the future of Artisan Tropic? What do you guys have? New product innovation you're lining up? Are there more projects on farm that you're planning to implement? Like, what is the focus moving forward?
Yeah, that's a great question, man. The last few months we've kind of been working on this this question of where are we going, you know, what's next. We've been talking a long time about innovating in a different category, and we are going to be launching a product here at the end of the year that's in a different category, which is really exciting.
Can you tell us what that is or no?
I can't. But it is like I tried the first samples at Expo West, and it's awesome. There's nothing like it in the market. We're really excited about it.
That's phenomenal, man.
we're going to be hopefully sourcing the one of the ingredients from my sister's father-in-law. It's really exciting. So that's down, you know, that's finally coming together. We've first started this project right when COVID started and kind of sidetracked everything. And then, yeah, man, the other idea or the other thing other than innovating is like we now have partners in the region and our own farms that are producing crops additional to plantain and cassava. And so we're trying to think about like, what does it look like to incorporate some of these crops in the products, potentially as like actual SKUs for retail, but maybe even at a smaller scale for like some online exclusive micro lots, you know, be that coffee, be that chocolate. So those are some of the ideas that we're playing with. But yeah, the innovation is really the one kind of for sure exciting thing coming down the line. We, you know, just as an example, we for Christmas gifts this past year, you know, we send gifts to different partners and stakeholders along the way. And we bought macadamias from Santi's, you know, organic biodynamic farm. We covered them in chocolate from my sister's father-in-law's farm. And we made these beautiful little chocolate covered macadamias that we sent to everyone. And again, that's not
get
a commercial
to get on like the Christmas list. I'd love to go on that list.
We'll send you guys some this year for sure.
Yeah, that's money, man. Two couple things in a question. One, that's my favorite part about all these agroforestry systems, right? Is that most of, if not all of the pairing crops or rotation is edible, right? And can be made into a product or eaten as is. Like that's the beautiful thing about this versus like the cover crops we're planting in the Midwest for corn and bean, you know, growers here in America, which great, happy we're doing that. But like most of it's not edible or it can't be, it's not commercially viable besides just the soil health properties. So
yeah,
I love that. And I think that's a super powerful piece. We're on the edges of our toes, cause we're standing, I think all of us about the new category. So we'll keep our eyes and ears peeled for that. Juan, curious you have a really cool video on the website. You have some copy about regen. I think you've put some stuff on the back of pack. It sounds like you haven't gotten all your regen production into pack. You know, like, have you done enough to get some reception from consumers and retailers? And like, what has that been? If so, like, what's the feedback been on the regen piece?
Yeah, man. The new packaging that we developed is flowing through right now. And that is kind of like a little brand update and, you know, really emphasizing the regenerative direction on the back of packaging. It's been great, man. I think, you know, the retailers that know the space, especially the natural space, are very, very excited about it. We worked with Whole Foods around the copy and the packaging to make sure it was all in line with what they want. And so we do really think that this is an important story to engage stakeholders with. And one of the things that we've, you know, had a lot of clarity and peace about is we want to tell this story really openly and transparently. All the challenges and
love that.
We don't think that we need to have, there's logistical issues that lead to this idea, but we don't believe that it's necessary to have an organic certification or an ROC certification on our products in order to start telling the story of what we're doing, because journey of regeneration has to start somewhere, and we are trying to really invite people to engage with that story. And it goes back to the logistical issue of like, they're the only certified organic plantain farms in the whole region are my sister's father-in-law, and that's not enough to to produce, you know, the volume that Artisan Tropic needs. Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. Like 2 years ago, first ever certified organic plantain farms. And so we don't just want to tell the story, but we want to engage people in it. So we're trying to invite brokers and buyers from big retailers to come to Colombia and see what we're doing. Like, we want an open
door
for them to come and see it with their eyes. This is one of the marketing initiatives that we are doing right now, is doing a contest to get two people to Colombia to kind of
go on a
5-day journey of seeing the regeneration that's starting there. And really hoping that it's not just like a fun experience, but a way to engage consumers with the fact that their participation in the food system really matters.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe we're going to touch on this, but I'm a part of a studio through Farmers Footprint called Renourish.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been the most expanding and challenging 10-month journey so far of rethinking what regeneration means. And one of the really fascinating ideas that's come out of it for me is that our company, and you could probably feel it in our conversation, there's such an essence around Colombia and the coffee region of Colombia. Like, we deeply care about this place. And there's been a miss or a gap for us at times about, you know, why does the consumer care? You know, most people haven't been to Colombia, and if they have, it's a small percentage. And then, you know, most people don't really care about Colombia in a way that, like, they're going to be super passionate or committed to this specific country for some reason. But the thing that's landed for me, and the bridge that I see such a beautiful potential for, is that place is really, really important, and that telling stories about this place would be a catalyst for people to care about their place. And so Ken Artisan Tropic is a small brand. It works in a small region of Colombia. But can we engage people in such a way that we build their capacity to care about their place? So now they have one of the items in their pantry, which they know where it was sourced, how it was sourced. And then they go back to their community, their church, their neighborhood, their family, and they have a little more consciousness and a little more intentionality about the other stuff in their pantry. Like, can I connect with local farmers to find meat? Can I connect with a local farmer to find milk? Can I find a certain connection to my place and bring a little more consciousness to the way that I buy my food here in my local place? And that's really exciting, man. Like, that, it just, like, really jazzes me with the potential for changing consumer behavior.
You're very clearly lit up from talking about it, man. That's beautiful. Shout out to Lauren Tucker. Shout out to Renourish Studios, doing amazing work. Excited to get to chat about that for the first time here on this episode. So thank you for bringing that to the forefront. And we're excited to continue to work alongside those folks and maybe even participate down the line. I think you just answered this question, right? But our last question is always the same one, which is, we're looking macro and we're looking at the future and we're saying, how do we change that consumer behavior? How do we get people to care about, you know, more kind of sourcing from place? How do we scale Regen Ag? And the quantifiable is, how do we get Regen brands to have 50% market share by 2050?
Yeah, that's a great question, man. I don't know if I have an answer that's well thought out or proven, but for me, it always comes back to, what's ours to do and what's ours to affect. And in the Renourish studio, we talk a lot about nested holes and your ability like to be a nested hole within another bigger nested hole and kind of like your sphere of influence, like what's your immediate sphere of influence and then what's a little more proximate one and then what's the greater one. And I love what Will Harris says about wide oak pastures. You know, he says he's not trying to save the world. He's just trying to save wide oak. And so that, you know, what I just shared is really what I see as a potential for brands and farmers is, you know, can we think in a way that builds capacity, that develops people's capabilities to care about their food and where it comes from? Because Artisan Tropic makes plantain and cassava chips. But if that one item and that one brand and that one story is told in such a way that helps consumers, and maybe consumers is too limited, that it helps customers and that including retailers, category managers, buyers, brokers, engage with their place, I think that's the potential for real, you know, incredible systemic change. Because regenerative agriculture isn't necessarily scalable to like feed the world, but it is, I'm just quoting Will Harris, it's reproducible, it's replicable. So the potential of people caring about their place and seeing what regeneration looks like in their context, at the retail level, at the family level, at the neighborhood level, at the community level, is really, the way that I think consciousness around food consumption, can change and regeneration, be, you know, adopted and mass, at mass levels. So that's my answer.
That's beautiful.
It's beautiful, man. Wow. Ditto.
Crazy. Jeez.
Oh, that's amazing stuff. Brother, you're a legend. Thank you so much for joining us, man. This was amazing.
Oh, I'm honored. Very, very honored. It was great to meet you guys a week ago. Made this conversation really, really fun, special.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Appreciate it,
super
brother.
Appreciate, you know, everything you guys are doing, the leadership, you know, it's just, it's incredible. It's such a great story and looking forward to seeing what Artisan Tropic does next.
Awesome, man.
Yeah, man.
Thank you, guys.
Right. See you, Juan. For show notes, episode transcripts, and more information on our guests and what we discuss on the show, check out our website, regen-brands.com. That is regen-brands.com. You can also find our Regen Recaps on the website. Regen Recaps take less than 5 minutes to read and cover all the key points of the full hour-long conversations. You can check out our YouTube channel, Regen Brands Podcast, for all of our episodes with both video and audio. The best way to support our work is to give us a 5-star rating on your favorite podcast platform, subscribe to future episodes, and share the show with your friends. Thanks for tuning in to the Regen Brands Podcast, brought to you by the Regen Coalition and Outlaw Ventures. We hope you learned something new in this episode, and it empowers you to use your voice, your time, and your dollars to help us build a better and more regenerative food system. Love you guys.